Let me turn to, we have two speakers here signed up to speak on matters that are not on our agenda. And so first I would like to recognize David Beck, if you would come up to the podium.
Good evening.
How are y'all? This is sort of a quality of life issue that's not huge, but I have just been thinking that does Carrboro have a sort of a pooper scooper law? And if not, I sort of think it's time to consider one, just as one who does a lot of walking around town. And the there are a lot of responsible dog owners out there, but a lot of irresponsible ones. And I've talked briefly with some on the board and just wanted to present it so it could be considered. I don't know what Chapel Hill does or even what we do legally, but I think that that's all I wanted to say. So I want to put it before y'all and ask any questions. Like I say, not a big deal, but I think it is worth the town doing.
So. Well, we'll just scoop that right up and put it on the agenda.
What's that, Jeff?
What have you been walking?
All just from between Carver Elementary and my house, and it's not in my yard, but it's just really, it's like sidewalks, it's a little, it's, I don't know if it's gotten worse or I've noticed it more, but I think it's sort of, you know, not responsible behavior by some dog owners. So
people don't take the little plastic bag.
Exactly. So I've been thinking, I know it's the Paris of the Piedmont, but there are some parts of Paris that we don't necessarily want to emulate.
Better left behind.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, David. We don't have any ordinance that addresses this.
The issue has come up from time to time, and
has it come up?
It was requests like yours, David. Similar circumstances, if I recall correctly. Mike can probably remember this. Jackie can as well. That on prior occasions we kind of chose to take a public education tack with it in the past. That's not to say that your approach might not be timely. So
right. So I'll just add one more squeaky voice to the wheel, I guess, something of that nature.
I would take advantage to also remind the governors that we have dog parks, you know, where they can do that. Even there, they have to.
Well, people want to walk their dogs in the morning and afternoon. I understand that, but. Yeah.
So they don't have to leave the evidence behind, you
exactly.
might say.
Exactly.
All right.
It'd be nice to walk without shoes also sometimes.
Yes.
Is the board inclined to...
Let's talk about it. Maybe get a report from staff on what the status of our existing ordinance is and then discuss it.
Okay.
I mean, we don't have to discuss it next week, but we need some time.
All right. Well, let's put that into the offing then, if that seems agreeable to people.
Complaints and good
discussion. Okay.
Now
very
that's
good.
Action. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye. And I also have a Catherine Zeman signed up to speak. Catherine, if you would come up to the podium.
I just wanted to come tonight and bring up the issue of our sister city again in Mexico. And I've started a project affiliated with the UNC Med School, and we're working on just doing a whole two-month session down there bringing different health things. It started as an HIV/AIDS testing project, and it's kind of developed as we've had more doctor volunteers into diabetes and cholesterol and blood pressure. So I wanted to definitely bring it to the Carrboro City as a whole, letting you guys know what we're doing with the sister city and see how much you guys wanted to get involved in our project.
Which city is this?
Juventino Rosas in Mexico, yeah. So.
Well, that's great. I appreciate your bringing that to our attention. I didn't actually know that we were working on that. I think there's some interest there. If you would send some little bit further information to us about how to get further involved in that.
Yeah, I went ahead. I've got three non-stapled copies. Of just kind of a summary of what we're doing, what our goals are. I've got a rough budget of what we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing like a preliminary trial in April here in town, kind of targeting the Hispanic community here, just a one-day health fair, trying to get tied in that way, and then jump in June and July down there. And we actually went in this past December through the church and met the people. Two of us went down to Mexico, to Juventino Rosas, and kind of got the project going.
That's great. So. Thanks very much. If you would give one copy of that to our town clerk, I know she will get us each a copy of it.
Okay.
And if you would maybe just drop the other two here.
Sure.
John and I will share those, and we'll get copies for the rest of the Board of Aldermen. Thanks very much for that.
Thank you.
You did great.
Okay, and I have one more speaker signed up, Jeanette Moore, but it looks like speaking on the park issue. We got a couple people who want to talk about the park. All right, well, we'll...
Other issues.
There are a couple others.
Other matters.
Jay and Nova. Also.
Okay. One of y'all come up.
I'm Melva Fager Oaken, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to present here. I just wanted to present briefly about an opportunity to both improve employee health and decrease medical costs for employees, and that would be to address the issue of tobacco cessation. I work in this area. I work with hospitals and municipal units across the state. And so just briefly, if you're going to address this issue, the first step would be to make sure that they have all the resources they need to quit, whether it's chewing or smoking. And that would be medicines. And we have a free North Carolina quit line where people can call from 8 in the morning till midnight, Spanish, English. They can speak to professionally trained counselors. It doesn't cost anything. The next thing would be to, one, address the issue of people smoking on the job. I, for one, am very upset to see a police officer on duty with children around smoking a cigarette. And that's the whole modeling issue. So, one, you could start addressing the issue of the use of tobacco currently of employees while they are on the clock. Two would be, there are some municipalities and hospitals that have chosen to, as a way of encouraging people to quit, is one, besides giving them the resources to be successful, two would be to charge them extra for their medical insurance. Moses Cone Hospital charges each employee, not only if the employee smokes, but if any member of their household smokes, because it's a secondhand smoke issue in addition to direct smoking costs. And then most excitedly, the number one reason why people quit the use of tobacco is if you made this whole campus tobacco-free. So I have worked with 32 hospitals in the state who have made their whole campus, meaning parking lot, lawn area, everything, tobacco-free. It is the number one reason why people then, employees, go on to quit the use of tobacco. So again, this is my work. I'd be more than happy to come back and report in more detail, but I know as you look at the budget constantly, you know, how can we not only save costs, but in a really profound way, improve the healthier employees. This is a great way to do it. So thank you.
Thanks, Mel.
Good evening. My name is Jay Bryan. Thank you for that resolution, Mark. I appreciate it. The board doing that for Roland. I had a couple of quick things. I was at a recent meeting of the Carver Day Committee and was reminded that last year I came before you with a request that you look at the idea of developing an award for Volunteer of the Year and perhaps for other volunteers. So I'm asking you about the status of that. I think I hope you will follow through on that and establish something, because there are just so many great volunteers in this town. Including Bob Wright, who's run the Carver Day for many years, but there are many more. So if I appreciate you following through on that. I don't know what the status of it is.
No, I don't know.
Jackie, do you recall where?
I don't know. And if I don't know and Mark doesn't know, that probably means it's gotten lost, and we should try to resurrect okay. that. So thank you for reminding
sure.
us.
Sure.
Yeah.
The second thing is about
let's see, this would have been in 04, the Northern Transition Area Advisory Committee brought to you a lighting ordinance or revisions to the lighting ordinance and policy of the town. And at that time, the board approved a resolution that said that it should be sent back to staff, looked at, revised, that the street lighting portion should be added to the street lighting policy and circulated among the various advisory boards. It's now 3 years later and or 2 years later, and nothing's happened with it. I understand that the staff's position is that it's part of the, they consider it part of the comprehensive plan revisions. Problem is that there are a number of subdivisions, park, and various other things that are coming online in the Northern Transition Area. By the time you get to the policy, there won't be anything to affect. So I would ask that you pull that policy from the revisions. There's been, Mr. Groh has made some revisions to the ordinance, and fast-track it through so it gets going and becomes a part of the policy and is applied to these various things that are Claremont. I mean, there's a number of them, and you know them that are coming on board. So I've got the minutes here if you wanted to review those, but otherwise I'll just make that request.
Mm-hmm. What's the date on those minutes?
March 9th. March 9th, 2004. Jackie.
I'd like us to ask staff to give us a report on that within the next month and for us to start moving forward on that, because I think Jay's right, with so much beginning to happen in that area, light pollution is going to be one of the things that really affects the people who currently live there and will affect their ability to adjust to changes that are going to be happening.
So they want to be kept in the dark?
Very good, John.
Does the board agree with that? Or?
I support that thought. Yeah. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's move forward on that. Particularly, as you point out, in light of the fact that there are a number of developments that are coming through the pipeline right now, and actually there are a number more that you may not even know about, but quite yet. But
and Chris Potter's still around, so he can come and represent if you need to. The third thing is a request from the Northern Transition Area Advisory Committee to ask you to set up a design committee, task force, whatever, to look at the design of the fire station. Just a couple of quick things. To me, it's and to us, it's an opportunity for the town to show what it can do in terms of design as opposed to setting design standards for other people. It's a public building in the Northern Transition Area that needs a visual connection to the rest of the town. It's an opportunity to involve people out there who may not see their connection to the town as it should be or ought to be. There have been other models back some years ago when the post office near James Street was being looked at. There was a community, Charette, mm-hmm. and Alan Spalt was very involved in that, looking at the design and location and so on of that particular building. And it worked out, I think, for everybody very well. So I know that there may be some feeling that this might extend the time here. I guess I'd remind you that this issue has been around a number of years about just doing this building or this what it will be. And boards, generally advisory boards, come in at the end of the process. What takes time is for certainly staff review and so on. If you set up this kind of committee with an architect, a landscape architect, and some other people and run concurrent, I believe that it can be done without delaying the process. So that's a request made to you.
Jay, just a brief question.
Sure.
Something that we were, and I know that this has been, a long time coming, And there are obviously concerns. You know, as you'll recall, we participated together on the Century Center Review Committee where, you know, we had a positive outcome, but it was a very lengthy process to do that work. In our retreat, we've discussed once again, the idea of trying to move forward with putting together a concept review process so that we get front-end input, hopefully in the way that you describe. If we were to, I don't know what kind of timeline that we're talking about for moving that idea forward, but if that process were in place by the time we ran this through our own system, do you think that would serve, essentially that would serve the purpose that you're describing?
Not knowing what would be involved in that, it's possible.
We talked about the concept review process back when we were serving together back when.
And I thought it was an upfront review process for basically staff and maybe advisory boards. But as far as the general public, we're getting sort of another opinion, expert opinion from an architect or architects. I don't know how they would fit.
How that would plug in. Right. We don't either.
So I'm looking for just something that expands the opportunity, both from the community standpoint but expertise standpoint, about what might work that might not occur at the staff level or board level. So,
how do you envision the logistics of that?
Well, I don't know how the staff or you envisioned how you were going to develop the plans for it. I'm assuming you may be either contracting out for the design of it or working in-house. I'm not sure about that, but if you are going to contract it out, then that architect could be approached about setting up something that would allow for that kind of input and recommendations.
Or
that's just off the top.
Or to like get ahead of things, would having a small committee of interested citizens that include people with design skills meet early on before we even hire anybody and come up with just some basic principles that they would like to see, and just, you know, have it time limited, have like one facilitated meeting where the ideas get down on paper so it doesn't become a cumbersome 10-month long process. Would that work? How would the board feel about that?
I think it's worth asking staff how they would feel about putting something like that in.
Let me ask you a question. All the fire stations look alike in Chapel Hill and Carborough, and they're pretty boxy, ugly buildings, but probably they're cost-effective, and also, I mean, they just need big bays to get the trucks out and all that stuff. Do you envision something? I mean, what sort of feedback input you want to make it look? I'm talking about like architectural standards here, so make it look like the houses over there, or a fire station looks like a fire station everywhere to me. That doesn't mean it's the most beautiful thing, but probably. If it's going to cost the same thing, I'm all for it. If it's going to increase the cost, as long as the folks who want it differently and wants to pay for it, we might consider. I will be open-minded, too.
Sure. I recognize that issue, of course, is your decision finally, that what you want to spend on it. But I think there are different styles. I mean, of firehouses, there are any number of them around the community, Hillsborough, Cary, Chapel Hill. So I don't want to make a big production about it, but it is an opportunity, as I said. And I think the idea would be to see what a group could come up with that might serve the public interest. That's all. So it's a proposal, and I appreciate your time on it. And sure.
Well, did. I thought Jackie's idea was interesting, and it was suggested that we turn to the staff for a minute for some reaction to it, which was your proposal was, in essence, that we would have sort of
a one-day
charrette or whatever you want to call it, meeting that where we would invite the public to give some input on the design of the building.
Early on in the process.
Right.
So it's not like being presented with an architect's plan and then picking it apart and saying, no, do this, do this, do this instead, but instead the group come up with some basic design elements that they want to see incorporated into whatever we contract out with the architect for. So it's not redoing an architect's plan, and it's not adding to the time that it would take. It would simply be a one-day design charrette.
I have a question before you ask. Maybe I'm missing something, but I'm not understanding what how the concept review would miss keeping something like a fire station within the the design interests of the town of Carrboro. Can you clarify that for me?
I'll speak to that, because I think this is kind of what Jay was getting at initially, is, we don't build that many new public buildings in the town. And so as the town that's, kind of creating its identity in part through our own architecture, it's in our interest to want to think about how we can design that building to best serve our sense of what Carrboro is. And so I think Jackie's idea is a good one. I think that as part of doing that, we can invite some of our own design professionals who might take it upon themselves to do some research or scratch their heads and, come up with some suggestions that can then go to whoever the actual official designer of the project is, as input out of that process.
And I think, I'm imagining that the meeting would be held like probably out at the Homestead Community Center, and would have a little bit different geographic focus than just our sort of standard concept review here at Town Hall. I'm reading that into your suggestion. But
so it has good community building
opportunities
too.
Yeah, I'm all for that kind of feedback, but that's not what I'm hearing. I mean, I think if this is a public building paid by all the citizens of Carrboro, not just the folks in the northern area, the newly annexed folks,
true,
which we want to include and participate and make sure they feel welcome, I think we have an ordinance, we have our own process. Unless that's the current and past policy, or we want to create a new policy for public buildings, let's make sure that's part of our ordinance. But I feel it's bad governance to all of a sudden go piece by piece piecemeal, or just make special exceptions to communities. We should do that. I mean, it should be the policy, but not the exception. And and especially if it's going to increase the cost. I mean, this stuff takes staff time, lawyer time, architect time. I think we know what we want in Carrboro, and I would like to see in that building rather than just a I don't think we can make a beautiful fire station. I want it to be for what it is, but at least under some kind of green standards. That's what taxpayers, I think, will support. But I just want to remind everybody that this is, it should be everybody in Carrboro. We should participate as we, all the public hearings are, not just for these folks.
Anybody can drive to Homestead Center.
Well, I think we did do some process kind of along these lines in developing our plan for the Martin Luther King Park, for example, which is not a new building, but it's actually probably considerably more expensive than the fire station, really. I hear what you're saying. I think as long as it's not too far out of line with what we've done looking at MLK Park or that type of thing, then to me it doesn't necessarily establish any particular new precedent. That's my thought anyway. Can I suggest that maybe what we need to do is actually have a little proposal come before us at an agenda when we've reserved some specific time to spend a little time on it, if that's, because it seems like there's a variety of feelings on the board. We don't have a consensus here right now, so let's schedule a time for hopefully later this month or possibly in early April.
Let me just say just one other comment about it. I looked at the duties of the Appearance Commission, and noticed that the word design is not in their vocabulary, in their charge. And one of the problems, if you say review of the appearance commission, is they don't have any teeth or power to say anything about the design. So kind of an amended request, a part of this is for you to look at the appearance commission's charge and just see if there's a way to amplify it to allow design issues to come before it and have them have power to affect those. So that's a...
Put that in the same agenda.
That's an interesting thought. It sounds good to me. There's some statutory provisions about appearance commissions, so we'll have to look at that issue.
They're an advisory body. So the last thing is...
They're not always, though. I mean, that is to say, some of their functions are not advisory for the appearance commission.
True.
So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
In last summer, with the support of the TAB and Northern Transition Area Advisory Committee and the board, you all supported reducing speed limit on Old 86 between Eubanks Road and Hillsboro, as well as on Union Church. DOT responded with their usual cursory on that cursory letter. Perhaps that's what I felt. That'll make the news, I'm sure. And it just said, basically, we're not going to change the speed limit on Old 86. So I've left this alone, but it's kind of bothered me, and I would request, I've got the letter, that you somewhere at some point before or after the summer have Mr. Murray, the transportation engineer, come back and explain to you why it is that on a very dangerous road that's going to have a lot of traffic and subdivisions coming on and so on, just like Homestead Road, why you can't reduce the speed limit. So that's my last request. I've been saving up, and I appreciate your time tonight. Do you remember that at all?
Yes.
Yeah. The board members? Okay. Yeah. It just doesn't give any rationale data for it. So.
Okay. Thanks, Jay.
Thanks.
Could I ask for a clarification on the fire station item? Is there something you're expecting from staff to propose, or exactly what is it you're asking?
I don't think. I mean, just if y'all have some reaction to the whole discussion, then you might summarize that in a page or so. But I don't know that we were asking.
I just want to see it on the agenda so that we can flesh it out. I don't see this as a huge undertaking. I don't see us having to hire a professional architect to come in and facilitate it. I see it more as bringing together some of the usual suspects that have design ideas and members of the community in the northern part to spend from 9 to 12 on a Saturday morning throwing out ideas for what they do and don't want architecturally in the new fire station. And I am not looking to have people say it should look like a Victorian mansion. I think we have some very pragmatic design people in our town, and it's just so that what we get out there fits in with the rest of Carborough and makes folks happy. So I don't see it as very complicated, and staff would just come back with some proposals on how to get that meeting going.
Let me ask you a question. If it looks like the one we got here, doesn't that look like the one that we have in Carborough?
I'm going to ask y'all to hold off on this discussion until we get a chance to schedule it for our agenda, because it sounds like there's a certain depth of feeling about the issue on both sides, so, or however many sides there may be. So we'll get to this later this month or in early April.
It's expensive.
Okay.
I have one more question for Steve.
Yes.
Which is, do we provide any of the kind of smoker cessation information, at least, that Melville was referring to employees?
I believe that we do through our insurance agency, because they do lots of things with wellness information, but beyond that, I'm not aware of any active cessation program that, that the town's ever had.
Okay. Would it be appropriate for Melva to provide some information to Desiree for her to consider in terms of integrating it into some of the programming that she's doing?
Sure. And, you know, we'd be glad to consider whatever, you know, particularly from a volunteer standpoint. I guess these kind of things are things we've talked about with our insurance broker in the past, and there's always a balance between personal freedoms and the health issues. And so anyway, we'll be right. glad to take the information and then go wherever the board would like for us to go with it.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for making sure we followed up on that. All right. Briefly, two more things before we get started on our agenda proper. One is that there was some discussion by some of the board members about the possibility that we might not consider tonight the last item on our agenda, the Connector Roads policy as it relates to Lloyd Street and the North Greensboro Street area, but rather, you know, reschedule that for some time later this year, given that Alderman Brown is not here to discuss it tonight, and she did have an opinion about the matter. So, and there's nothing pressing about this matter. Any, you know, nothing is happening imminently with it. So, with unanimous consent, hopefully we will table that topic until another time. So, if you were here to hear about that topic, we're not going to address the Lloyd Street North Greensboro Street connection tonight. And then we have a couple of people who need to be given their charges as members of our advisory boards. Mary Rabinowitz, Darren Purdy, David Harrison, and Carolyn Buckner, many of whom are here. Let's actually, are you David Harrison? Come on up, David. And if you'll just step up to the town clerk's desk right there.
Hello. I'll just read this charge to you and have you sign off on it. As an advisory, Human Service Advisory Commission member, you will study all funding applications received by the town from non-departmental agencies and make recommendations to the Board of Aldermen on these funding requests and perform such other duties as may be assigned from time to time by the Board of Aldermen. I'll get you to agree to that.
And David, if you'll come over here and just
sure.
say hello to our board.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for joining our Human Services Commission.
Northern Transition.
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Thank
excellent.
You.
Well,
apparently
alone.
All right.
You and half of Carborough.
Carolyn Buckner, you would come on up to the town clerk's desk.
As a member of the Environmental Advisory Board, you will, number one, advise the Board of Aldermen on policies, ordinances, and administrative procedures regarding environmental protection and the conservation of natural resources. The areas of review for the EAB include new development, solid waste, air quality, stormwater management, energy conservation, solar energy, groundwater, natural resources, and other areas. Number two, suggest to developers ways to utilize energy-efficient design techniques such as daylighting, siding, solar exterior lights, and other solar energy techniques as they become economically viable. Three, adopt a set of guiding principles or goals for the EAB and review these goals periodically to determine if they are being obtained and take any other action authorized by the Board of Aldermen.
And is Darren Purdy here? No. Mary Rabinowitz, if you would come up.
Hello.
As a planning board member, you will make studies and recommend to the Carver Board of Aldermen plans, goals, and objectives relating to the growth, development, and redevelopment of the town and the surrounding extraterritorial planning area. Develop and recommend to the Board of Aldermen policies, ordinances, administrative procedures, and other means for carrying out plans in a coordinated and efficient manner. Make recommendations to the Board of Aldermen concerning proposed conditional use permits and proposed zoning map changes as provided by the land use ordinance, and perform any other duties assigned by the Board of Aldermen.
Okay. And now, we turn to our consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Item 1 is the approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. Item 2, a request to approve a budget amendment. Item 3, an appointment to the Air Quality Advisory Group. Item 4, a request to set a public hearing for minor modification to the cellular tower located at 515 South Greensboro Street. Item 5, an appointment to the Arts Committee.
The items.
All right, it's been properly moved and seconded for all 5 items. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. At this point, we turn to item D1, a courtesy review of Twin Creeks Park Master Plan. I would like to start by acknowledging and welcoming the chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners, the Honorable Barry Jacobs, and thank you, Barry, for coming here tonight, as well as a number of other county and school staff members. Mr. Manager, do you have a presentation on this?
Just a brief comment from the agenda. The Orange County Board of Commissioners has requested that the Board of Aldermen conduct a courtesy review of a conceptual master plan for Regional Park and Educational Campus to be located at 7906 Old Highway 86. Materials related to the conceptual master plan are attached. Town staff requests that the Board of Aldermen review the attached information and discuss the potential project with representatives of Orange County government. And I just remind the board, as you all know, there will be a conditional use permit application forthcoming on this project, so you'll have an opportunity to go through that process at some later time, but this is a part of our courtesy review process.
Commissioner Jacobs.
Mr. Mayor, members of the board, good evening. Thank you for introducing me. I'm here on behalf of the Orange County Board of Commissioners to thank you in advance for sharing your thoughts and concerns about Twin Creeks or Munisa Nump, which I don't pronounce very well, but is a Saponi name for Twin Creeks. We tried to use a Native American name from the group that actually used to, they wouldn't have owned it. That was concerned about that land before it was moved into other hands, shall we say. There are a number of members of our staff here tonight. Lori Taft, who's our Parks and Rec Director, Maribeth Carr, who's our Open Space Design Specialist, Dave Stancil, who's the Director of our Environmental and Resource Conservation Department, and I see Steve Scribes, who doesn't work for us, the Assistant Superintendent of the Chapel Hill Carborough Schools. Ms. Carr and Ms. Taft have been with us a number of years, but not as long as this project has been with us. We bought this property in 2001, started planning in 2002, and I have to say your discussion about the fire station and getting community input resonates because we spent about a year, well, Dave will outline it for you. I won't steal what he has to say, but we had a 23-member group that worked on this for quite some time. Then Carborough asked us to have a community meeting to get additional comment, which we did. then some citizens raised concerns about where the schools were sited and whether it would be more walkable to change the entire design. So we went through that process. Now we're in Carbro's approval process, and we look forward to working with you on this as in many other matters. And I'm here in case there's a policy question or issue that you care to raise. I'll be glad to at least discuss it. Of course, I can't speak for our board, but I might be able to explain some things. So unless you have a question for me now, I'll just go sit down.
Thanks very much, Commissioner Jacobs.
Thank you for having us tonight. What I'm going to do in the next 10 minutes or so is something that's very difficult. I'm going to try and walk through about 4 years' worth of work that's contained in the master plan that you've received in your packets and we'll show in a few moments. Much of the rationale for how the plan evolved into its final product really would be beyond our ability to convey tonight in the time. We'd spend another half an hour talking about all the different processes that Commissioner Jacobs alluded to, but I would like to try and capture some of the background as context and then walk through some portions of the design. We did, include in your materials a key issues list, just to recognize that there are a number of issues that have been discussed and will continue to be discussed that are important to the project, and hopefully that helps provide some additional rationale as well. The history of this park, which originally was called the Chapel Hill Township District Park, actually goes back 18 years, believe it or not, to 1988 when Orange County adopted its Master Recreation and Parks Plan. And at that time, it included a proposal for a Chapel Hill Township District Park in the area of Old 86 and Eubanks Road. This is now part of our comprehensive plan and has been for many years now. And as you know, other plans throughout the years have looked at the possibility, the town's Northern Transition Area Plan envision the possibility of a park in this area as well. But it really wasn't until 1997 that the means for creating the parks that Orange County had envisioned in its plan became possible with passage of the 1997 Orange County Parks Bond. And as a part of that, the vast majority of the $3 million in that bond went to the purchase of this property for the Chapel Hill Township Park. 3 years after that, Orange County created its Lands Legacy Program, which, as you may know, is designed to acquire important natural and cultural resource lands, and that includes parklands as part of our charge. One of our first priorities was to try to find a site for this long-planned Chapel Hill Township District Park. And during the year 2000, our staff was engaged in a six-month process of evaluating a number of different properties. In our scheme of things, a district park is a park of generally, it could be anywhere from 75 to 199 acres in size. We were focusing more on something in the 75 to 150 range. Eventually, we came up with final candidate sites throughout Chapel Hill Township and identified a preferred site, which turned out to be the former Kate Farm, which is the vast bulk of the site that you see on the aerial photo here. The county had also expressed interest for some time in co-locating facilities, such as parks and schools. And as we began negotiations for the purchase of this property, we learned that the Chapel Hill Carbro City Schools were, in fact, negotiating with an adjoining property. This is the Cape property that we had originally identified as the park site, and we had learned that the schools were actually talking to the Hunter family, which owned this part of the property here. The possible synergies between co-locating a park and a school campus really was seen as a golden opportunity. We pursued that, and after discussions with the schools, we agreed to take over the negotiations for the purchase of the entirety of the property. There was also a meeting of representatives of the town board and the county board during that same time in the spring of 2001. In April of 2001, the terms were agreed to, and we purchased the property in May of 2001, 193 acres in total for a combined schools, campus, and park site. This aerial tries to provide some context also about the surrounding properties. Just going around the circle here, as you can see, to the north, Eubanks Road, of course, is the northernmost boundary, along with a couple of small parcels in Duke Forest. The Blackwood Division of Duke Forest, as you certainly know, extends on the north, I guess that would be the northeast corner. To the east, we have properties that are owned by the Hoganaires and related family members. I would note that we have met with those folks on three occasions over the last couple of years to make sure they were aware of what was going on with the proposal and keep them apprised of the process. To the south, is a property that I think you currently are going to have a CUP application or may already have an application in on a proposed Valentine subdivision to the south. And then, of course, Old 86 is the western boundary. There is a small parcel in holding here and the Morris Grove Heights subdivision located in the northwest corner. The southern two-thirds of the property that you see on the aerial is the former Kate Farm. This is a farm that had been in operation through the late 1800s. The Cates owned it at least as far back as 1877. It had been an active farm for many years throughout the 1900s. It ceased to be an active farm as a dairy in the 1970s and as a farm at all in the early 1990s. So by the time we acquired it, it had been had no longer been a farm. The northernmost 44-acre portion of the Hunter Tract has been wooded for many years and has not been farmed for a long time. There are two primary streams that traverse the property, and that gives the site the eventual name that it received. The most significant of them is Jones Creek, which is a tributary. Both of these are tributaries of Bowling Creek, which runs approximately where the laser pointer goes, and it serves to actually bisect the property almost in two as it heads to the northwest. Another stream called Buckhorn Branch moves in this area. There's a small pond on the property and extends across the road as well. So these provide kind of a natural separation between the different components of the site, as you'll see. We also can see the former cultivated areas of the farm. This is the old Cape farmhouse, and you can see the many dark green areas on the map. Those are former farm fields that have grown up over the years in pine and sweet gum in the last 10 or 20 years, and those are certainly very readily apparent on the map. The Cape buildings and house is certainly very interesting. The house dates to 1929. It has been identified as being historically significant for its area. That was identified in our cultural and archaeological survey that we did in 2002. There's also a barn, a granary, several outbuildings that exist on the property. There's also something we didn't know about when we did the process is an old collapsed cabin that dates back well into the 19th century that none of our historic inventories identified at that point in time that we didn't know about that also exists on the site, so you never know.
Where is that?
It's on the other side of Jones Creek, so it would be about right here. It's collapsed now, so it's beyond repair, but it certainly may have some significance from a historical standpoint. In 2002, we began the process of planning for this site. At that time, you probably heard the term Chapec, maybe not recently, but that was the name given for the Chapel Hill Township Park and Educational Campus, our original working title for this property. Commissioner Jacobs mentioned there was a 23-member work group. I think we provided a copy of the roster of that group for your reference and your materials that met from October of 2002 to May of 2003 to develop a master plan. There were representatives from the county commissioners, the town board, different advisory boards, the school board, area citizens, some of whom are here tonight. And really to describe that process in full would take another 10 or 15 minutes, so I won't do that, except to note that the work group went through a very thorough process of learning about the site, the area's infrastructure, and the plans for the area. And we went through a series of design charrettes as well to try and come up with a master plan for the property. And that was created in May of 2003. It was at this time that our new name came about, using the concept of the fact that we had largely parallel streams to the property, the idea of Twin Creeks as a name was identified. And as Commissioner Jacobs mentioned, we wanted to recognize that their pre-European settlement, there certainly were a lot of folks who had a lot of interest in this property, and so we contacted the tribal linguist and came up with Moniesa Nampa, which is the name for the site in Tutela Saponi. To jump ahead a bit, in the spring of 2004, the master plan came again to our Board of Commissioners for consideration, and a number of questions were raised about smart growth initiatives, and particularly related to the school site and pedestrian access, among others. And at that point in time, staff was asked to look at a possible second alternative master plan that tried to deal directly with those issues. And we created an alternative design in 2004. As was mentioned, there was a public forum held in October of 2004 where that was presented. We received comment. Generally, the changes that were seen between the two plans included a rearranging of some of the field configuration for safety reasons, the identification of what we call a red line trail, which is a highlighted priority trail to connect the school's campus and the park and the points to the south along the Jones Creek Greenway. I should also note that in 2003, as Commissioner Jacobs mentioned, there were other ideas that came up. The idea of flip-flopping the site, in essence, and moving around the school and park was considered. And that was reviewed and by the staff and commissioners. And we also heard from a number of citizens that were interested in action sports, possibly, at the site. When we did the master plan in 02 and 03, that was not something that came up with our committee, but we did hear from citizens who were interested in a BMX bike trail, for example, or other types of facilities. Eventually, the idea of completely swapping the site around was rejected, but there was noted that there were some changes that might be worth looking at. So one last time, we had a third design process in late 04 and early 05, and a short-term Twin Creeks Master Plan work group took one last cut at it, looking at some fairly specific issues, the action sports facility, whether or not it might make sense to move the elementary school, we'll show the locations of that in a moment, from one part of the site down to a site closer to the subdivisions to the south, and a few other matters. And eventually that group created its report in March of 05. Our Board of Commissioners took the plan up in the spring of 05, and in May of 05 we have a master plan that you have before you tonight that was adopted. I know that's a lot of background, but it's kind of important context since it's been going on for so long. So if I can, I'm going to switch maps now and talk specifically about the master plan itself. There are a number of features about this master plan that are probably worthy of note, but I'll highlight a few. A couple of guiding principles that our work group had going in was the concept of a seamless transition. We use that term a lot in the work group, and primarily to try and provide for efficient and effective and real connections between the school's campus, which had already been identified for the areas north of Jones Creek, and the park on the areas south of the creek. And there are some natural barriers on the site, primarily Jones Creek and the corridor around it, that preclude a lot of very, very close interactions. But if you look at the master plan, you'll see some things that have been worked in, trails that connect the two portions of the site as strategic places have been identified. The loop trail network, as part of our design, was set up so that it could be a cross-country course if the schools needed to use it for that reason at some point in time. And the playing fields of the park and the school's campus are in reasonably close proximity to each other given the corridor that we had between the two. We talked about Jones Creek as a natural corridor that would remain largely undisturbed, separating the portions of the site from the park to the school's campus to the north. We did also try to include what we called Olmstedian principles. Everyone thinks of Central Park when we talk about Olmsted, and what we tried to do here is provide for some places, meadows, and open spaces that were left undeveloped for free and flexible uses for a variety of leisure activities, unstructured recreational areas, if you will, that are important for citizens as well. One of the interesting features that we turned up in our surveys is the fact that we found a rhyolite quarry. Rhyolite was used for stone tools, and this general location, this hilltop on the western portion of the property, was found to be a quarry that was used probably in the 8,000 to 1,000 BC period to create stone tools. There's also a very small bartering station that's located generally in this area that looks like it was a place where people exchanged tools for whatever they were bartered with at the time. So those were some interesting things that we found out about the site. And those, as you can see, the quarry area is left largely undisturbed primarily for that reason. The educational campus, quickly, 76 acres on the north side of Jones Creek largely. As you can see here, it's less detailed and more conceptual. That's because we knew going in that we would have a hard time creating exact footprints and locations for these schools. And given that, you have dashed lines on the map in this area as opposed to more solid and concrete locations on the south. But as you can see, there is a proposed, at this time it was a proposed elementary and middle school configuration. This is the footprint of Smith Middle School and Rashkus Elementary, I believe, combined. And later we came to find out that the schools are going to propose separating those schools rather than having a conjoined elementary and middle. But at the time the plan was done, that was something that was discussed. There are a number of facilities, fields related to those schools. There's also a third school complex, or potential facility rather, that is located in this part of the site, undesignated, to be decided at some later date. So the possibility for a third facility also exists here. It's our understanding that the schools will all be bringing before you a proposal for a school facility at some point in time through the conditional use permit process there as well. Moving to the district park, south of Jones Creek, this is roughly 96 acres in size. Only about half of the park would be converted from its natural state. Well, I think one of our biggest challenges, and fortunately this site was large enough that I think we were able to accommodate it, is balancing low-impact recreation, open space and natural areas, and active recreation. And if we had not had a site of this configuration this size, we really would have had a hard time doing all of those things. But I think that in the end, we've been able to do that. As you can see, there are four full-size soccer fields that would be part of the park. There are two youth baseball fields, a number of other facilities, tennis courts, basketball courts, volleyball courts, that would be part of the park. So that's the playing field area. And you may recall from looking at the other map, that's the same area where the former farm fields were. And we did this purposely to try and not cut into a lot of the mature hardwood areas, but rather if we were going to locate active facilities that require grading, let's put them in where the young pine and sweet gum are rather than mature forest areas. There's another pot of activity in the park plan that I wanted to mention real quickly. The existing farmstead would be retained and used for some purpose that has not yet been designated. Certainly it's an important place, and we think it has a lot of possibilities. Co-locating children's facilities and senior recreation facilities was deemed as important in the master plan. So you'll see here we have a water playground and a children's playground, and in close proximity, croquet, bocce ball, and other activities, hoping to provide for interactions between seniors and children at the park site. There is a 3-acre pond that's located along Buckhorn Branch here. At this point in time, we have a trail proposed around one side of it. Not on the back side. This is a private property that's held there, so we're trying to stay away from that part of it. There's a picnic shelter also located nearby. And finally, a meadow along Old 86 that exists. We are proposing to retain that meadow and perhaps do a meadow restoration project. I think we included some information about that in your materials. Even with all of that work that's gone into the design to date, we know there are a number of other issues that have come up and will come up. We haven't talked about the connector road, the Lake Hogan Farms connector road extension, which is currently proposed is in this area. Water and sewer provision, phasing of the park. This is certainly a park that will take a number of phases and quite a bit of money over time to create. So we've provided the key issues document to try and address some of those matters, and I won't go into them now. To wrap it up all together, over a year's worth of actual design work has gone into the design that you have before you tonight. Our goal tonight is simply to provide context about how we got to where we are today and also describe the master plan that emerged from all of our work. We're very interested in receiving your comments about the plan tonight, which we can incorporate and examine as we move forward to getting a conditional use permit together for phase one of the park at some later date. We'll be glad to try and answer any questions.
We have one person who signed up to speak about this topic. It is not really a public hearing, but is Jeanette Moore here? Come on up and address us if you would.
Good evening. I'm Jeanette Moore, and I have been with, first of all, David and his staff, and all have done a really long, hard, good job at pulling it all together and listening to lots and lots of people with special interests. So I really think they've done a good job, and I'm only here to say how good they've done and to add something that might even make it a little better, not to tear down or to destroy. I live here. I have the opportunity to live in the park. And so I have a vested interest. I can't pretend that I don't. I do. And so I have sat in my home for 5 years, looking at the meadow, thinking about the park, and I have come to embrace it and to think that it is going to be a wonderful thing. And so the only tweakings that I would share with you is that they talked about, David talked about, they used old, I'm not going to say it right, but Olmsted's philosophy of parks, which the philosophy is key. because he felt that there was psychology in design, which means that you keep the traffic in the city out and you keep what's inside the nature part a refuge. You allow people to just be there and to soak up the loveliness. And so there are lovely parts of this park that, and there are two meadows, this meadow and this meadow, but there's also little spots. Many are by right by roads, but the thing that made his park special was that he used very thick screening between the outside world and the inside. So that, for example, this meadow here has lots of woods around it, and the road is a little bit far away, but it has a ball field. But what if you had a screen that kind of came in a little bit, and you had a little notch of a little meadow that just was a nice place to sit with benches, and you could maybe, you know, go up with a bird trail or whatever. But more importantly, of course, vested interest, the meadow next to me, is bordered by Old 86 and this soon-to-be entry road. And this has a feeling, if you're there, of a could-be meadow, but right now it's fieldish. It's very much like a field. So my thinking is that if we had something like thick edges, maybe 20 or 30 feet in depth, that would be simple to kind of permanently plant, such as like dogwoods and shrubs, and sort of come down so that you had maybe 20 or 30 feet, then you could really begin to envelop this meadow. You could, you know, keep it, for the people that were visiting inside, it would really feel more lovely, as it would, you know, if you had that kind of edging on this side. So, again, I don't want to talk too much in depth because I feel like I'm micromanaging and we're just really coming in with a big concept tonight. But I just wanted to kind of put my two cents in as to what I thought would make it, you know, even more special than it is. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
You are aware that that's part of the meadow restoration project, right?
Yes, okay. That's one of the options that is a possibility. But even if that were true and they were planting natural grasses here or, let's say, native sunflowers or whatever, there isn't that feeling of being enveloped. You really don't have anything at all between you and the road or you and the road here. And this is the entrance to the park. This is where if you get in the park, you can feel that it is truly beautiful and a place that you want to be and sit down with benches and bask in the outdoors and just feel like, yeah, you know, my kids are going to be over here playing soccer, but I'm going to read my book or do birding or whatever in this meadow or maybe part of that meadow or, you know, maybe whatever little nooks we could possibly, you know, carve or find out. I just think it's worth it to have these edges, these thick edges within the park.
Mr. Preston, since you are a neighbor of this park, are you concerned with the lighting of those fields? Or is there, isn't the height of the trees?
I'm concerned about the entire park.
I think you're boasting.
If you, it's helpful to the people watching the cable for you to stand near the microphone. Sorry.
Oh, that makes me feel so much better. Okay. I'm sorry, were there other questions you had?
The lighting.
I concerned about the lighting?
Since you probably, there is a lake and there's trees and...
There's an actual rise here between this and here. It is not flat. I mean, do I have concerns? Of course I have concerns, but, you know, I'm just right there. I don't think I have a say. And, oh, it's too bright for me in my house. I mean, if I could have a say, of course I'd say, you know, I don't want lights on in the night in the park. But I don't think I have that say.
But, I mean, you don't see the fields from your house.
Oh, they are feet from my home.
Okay.
My house is right here.
I'm telling you, your house is going to increase in value as you move in value.
Good.
It will.
I'll be concerned about
that. Just what Dave would be willing to pay you is probably a fair amount. Anyway, in any case, okay. Thank you very much for your perspective. Okay, and then Alderman Zaffron was sort of first up here. Just one more thing, though, is Steve Scroggs, did you want to address the – okay.
No, this was a brief question about something that was alluded to both Dave by you and Barry as well, which was early in the process you mentioned, and I'd spoken to a number of people who had expressed significant interest, again, in flipping the site, and I understand that that's a really major undertaking. And aside from simply the scale of that undertaking, can you talk a little bit about, as you said, the notion was rejected, in that intuitively the idea from the standpoint of locating the schools in a place where they would be more easily accessible to the neighborhoods that they would most likely serve. Intuitively, it seemed to make a lot of sense. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Those discussions, I think, we've had in early 04. And there certainly, it was a very interesting proposal. I think in the end, the discussions that we had with the school board representatives and talking about the pedestrian access indicated that it probably would not have a significant impact on the amount of pedestrian access children walking to school either way. That the tendency for a lot of the folks is to drive, and if they were going to walk to school, they would probably walk to either part of the property. In addition to that, we had already invested 2 years' worth of design, of course, in looking at the adequacy of the former farm fields for playing fields and the potential for the educational campus to the north. So my recollection is those were the primary reasons. There may have been others that I forgot.
And am I mistaken in inferring from the sort of state of development of these plans that the park planning was quite far along and that the educational campus planning is still fairly sketchy and in process?
And we knew that going in. In fact, our charge recognized that it would be difficult for us to say this is the exact footprint of the elementary school. So, yes, that's true, and we knew that our end product would be more conceptual on the educational campus side.
But I think that the school board's current thinking is that they're going to recycle a school design from the Rashkus school, is that right, for the elementary school. So at this point, and it's a little different than what's shown there, but at this point they're hoping to save a considerable amount of money on the design of the school by reusing that.
You know, I also thought of one other reason related to the redesign, that Eubanks Road, possibility of accessing from Eubanks Road, was also fairly important for the school's campus. So I think that was part of the consideration as well.
Jackie.
Would you please go over the roads for me? And my understanding is that the road that goes right through the park will connect to the new development, is that right?
Is the north-south road or the east-west? This one.
The north-south will connect to Lake Hogan Farm through the new development. Is that what you're talking about?
Right.
The horizontal road, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this one actually straddles the property line with the property to the south. And as designed here, it would be the entryway coming in past the entry meadow into the park. And then there would be a park road that accesses the parking lots and the different facilities with a turnaround and a possible bus stop. And then the other road, of course, is the Lake Hogan Farms connector extension, which comes out of the subdivision to the south and go north to Eubanks Road.
So what about the entrance to the new development? Where's that?
I don't know. That might be something for town staff to address. I understand that on this plan there would be a shared access, but I understand there's been some discussion.
Yeah, that's my concern is the shared access between the new development and the park. I have some issues with that.
Well, one access point obviously is the Lake Hogan Farm Road connector, but there's also, and this is just under review right now, it's not coming before you in the next 1 or 2 months even, it's going to be a few to several months away yet, but at this point, it's designed to have another connection into the development itself, approximately midway down this shared road. So right in here, going down into the development.
And why would the development be coming off of that instead of coming in a little on the other side?
By other side, do you mean south?
South.
There is a connection with Lake Hogan Farms on the south side also. So the you have the connector road, which you know is intended to go all the way to Eubanks.
Right.
And then within this development, you would have basically a road that's serving the houses, the proposed houses, which connects this road that you see with Hogan Hills Road, which is on the north end of Lake Hogan Farms.
Okay, since it's being built to serve both the park and the development, will it need to be built to different standards? Who will pay for the road? Will that be shared with the developer? That means, yeah, it adds, yeah.
It's Collectordale?
It is a Collectordale.
Yeah, this would be designed at the town's collector road standard, which is the widest town road. And I can let Dave speak to the funding or construction.
The latter point, we have had a couple of conversations with the developer of the property in the south who is interested in, I think we mentioned this in the key issues just briefly, interested in the possibility of a cost share arrangement on the road. But until we know the final configuration of it, it's a little premature. I think we're certainly willing to discuss the possibilities.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to say thank our staff who work in this project, as well as the Parks and Recreation Commission, Doris Murrell and myself, went to countless meetings when it was just a blank piece of paper and there was no facilities, and we just start placing things and getting the experts on different things, always with in mind Carver, we wanted more active recreation. That was one of the priorities this board charged me to make sure we secure. And at the same time, I think a lot of everybody who participated, you folks did an incredible facilitating job, and I think everybody have a sign. We didn't get the swimming pool we wanted there, but remind you, if there's any money, Jacob, you know, if there's anybody there in the county, we would love to have a swimming pool there. But I appreciate the incorporation of many of the recommendations that Carborough brought to the process, including the water spray park for children and incorporating that. This is environmentally sound water recycling project and a very appropriate place that I think a lot of folks will not, many children will find that park. I can see a lot of adults in the hot summers of North Carolina spending a lot of time there with their grandparents, whatever. But it has been an incredible, I think you folks really incorporated a lot of the input that the citizens brought forward, and the conservation that is going on that land is outstanding, given the topography. I mean, if you walk through that land, it is a challenge to build anything in there, and every single thing that was fitting there was, and it was with precision. So I really want to say thank you.
It's a very special site. I get a chance to walk the Jones Creek Corridor. That's really quite a remarkable area.
I had just a quick question, because I couldn't tell from my map. My eyes are getting old. On the proposed connector road that runs north to Eubanks, how many times does that road cross either Bolin or Jones Ferry? I mean Jones Ferry, Jones Creek.
Bolin Creek, the main stem of Bolin Creek would be off the map to the south here, okay. So I'm sure there is a crossing. In fact, I think the crossing is in Lake Hogan Farms, if memory serves.
Okay. There's an existing crossing.
Well, actually, it's interesting you mentioned that. The odd configuration of this road came about primarily for three reasons when we were doing the master plan. One, initially, as you may recall, there was simply a dashed line going north in the plan. And our challenge, as we noted, was to try and take that point A to point B thing and give it some, flesh it out a bit and give it some sort of sense of context. And there's only one crossing of Jones Creek would be in this area. What we try to do essentially were three things here. We try to use the topography of the site in the redesign to identify a road corridor that wouldn't be, cutting through hillsides or crossing the stream more than once. And in fact, if you go due north, you do end up having to look possibly cross the stream twice. One of the things that came up in the work group primarily was that the school's campus, the school's representatives were fairly concerned about the possibility of the road bisecting the school's campus, this part from that part. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of working it around to the eastern edge of the property was also identified. And then finally, a couple of landlocked properties here as well that we thought we'd try and provide access to as well as it moves north.
So the pink-colored line that is Y-shaped, that one right there, yeah.
That's what we call the Red Line Trail, which is a direct...
Okay, but that's not impervious surface.
Well, we don't know. It could be. I think we're going to have more discussions with you about the surface.
Thanks.
Dave, can you show us on the vicinity map where the Jones Creek goes its route toward the south?
Yes. Let's see. I think this is probably the best one I have.
Jones Creek, of course, always hard to follow on the aerials, but follows this path, and it goes east and then drops south. You can, in fact, see the area. It moves south into this subdivision, and then I believe, let's see, I'm losing the wrong place here, connects this way. Bowling Creek, the banks of Bowling Creek, I think, is here. So I believe, memory serves, this is Jones Creek, and Buckland Branch comes in this way.
I'm not certain. Once it gets further south, I haven't looked that closely at it.
No, that's right.
This is a little bit tangential, but have we looked at all at the feasibility of connecting Bowling Creek to the park along? I mean, it seems like that would be...
Well, that's actually what I was going to ask about the trail issue, and it's almost more... I'm not sure it's really that much of an issue for the county, because most of the issues are implicated off of their site, but your Red Line Trail comes down to this lateral road.
Yes, it does.
We'll just call it Stancil Drive for now.
I'm sure there's a better name.
but it comes down to that point, and I think the real question, and unfortunately we already had concept review on this other subdivision and didn't necessarily know to ask about this question at that time, but the real question is what sort of recreational amenities are imagined right now in the subdivision to the south there, and I guess the other question that comes to my mind is, there are a number of nice footpaths that lead through Lake Hogan Farms, but I'm not sure whether any of them lead up into that area. Anybody from our staff know the answer to either of those questions?
Good evening. There is, in existing Lake Hogan Farms, there's a trail that follows Bowling Creek. And then when Lake Hogan Farms was approved, there were some land dedications, some open space along,
Jones Creek
going north, and with the intent that could be used for a future trail corridor in the future. With the two developments that are proposed down this area, they are showing a portion of trail along, what's the other creek? I'm sorry.
Buckhorn Branch.
I'm going blank here. Along Buckhorn Branch, going up to this road to provide a connection into the park. The Parks and Rec Master Plan, dating back to 1994, includes trails along both Buckhorn Branch and Jones Creek. And so as we have been planning for the development in this area, we have taken that plan into account.
So. Well, that's good. I think it'll be important for our staff to stay on top of that issue as those things move forward. I think it's becoming very clear that there will be a really significant opportunity to create not so gradually in the next few years some type of greenway that will run all along from the vicinity of Eubanks and or Old 86 through this park all the way down to the Chapel Hill Carborough Town line at Estes Drive extension.
And a lot of that being built not through our tax dollars. I think that's a really important issue, and I think that as we look at this issue of whether that will be, whether the red line trail, as you call it, there will be an impervious surface trail, that I would like to look at that in the context of imagining that as a piece of a trail that is leading all the way down to Estes Drive, and have a conversation as a community about what that, how that entire Bowling Creek Greenway, if you want to call it that, will be, and what types of, you know, how accessible that will be for bicycles and wheelchairs and all sorts of different folks to use.
I would note with the approved Winmore plans and the Claremont plans that are recently approved, they do include portions of trail along Bowling Creek with both developments.
That'll be a part of that, and I think, you know, there'll be an opportunity to discuss with the university so-called University Commons project, and how a trail might fit into that. But the one of the trails in Lake Hogan Farms basically stubs out in the direction of the Cotton property and the university owned property over there, and a connection would be possible through those two sites down to where Winmore's trails stub out.
If I could add just one thing, we from day one have envisioned that there would be a segment of Jones Creek Greenway throughout this property. So before we even started talking about the red line, which certainly could meet a lot of those needs too, this yellow trail parallels, as you can see, the corridor. So we have envisioned that your Jones Creek Greenway that's in your plan would in fact continue and be part of this site as well.
Well, regardless of which trail it is, I think the point is for to make sure that we're all looking at the bigger picture here of how all these different trails could or would fit together, and in fact that Jones Creek alignment that you're showing there seems more attractive in that it gets you off of, for a lot of that distance, it gets you off of being right along the driveway essentially into the park.
I just want to make one other comment and thank the committee and Dave for having the foresight to look at the active sports and making that a part of the plan. I know a lot of people in the community really appreciate the inclusion.
Thank you, and I realize I forgot to even show you where we eventually came up with a proposed BMX trail, but there is a power line easement that runs through the property, and this area right here you can see on the map is, we are having discussions with Piedmont Electric about the possibility of locating it within their easement, which is neither park nor school, and so it's certainly an area where it might be able to be accommodated.
And where you want to keep the plants down anyway. I wanted to talk about the connector road for a minute if we could. And I guess, you know, the Board of Aldermen put this connector road on the plan, I don't know how many years ago, but many years ago. I have two questions about it. One is just kind of generally what the philosophy or what the thinking is about the need for this road to come through this site in the way that it does. You know, there was a time when it was imagined that this site might be rezoned to village mixed use, and that there might be a very different set of uses on this site, and I can imagine how you know, a connector road through there would be really critical to making that type of development work on this site. I'm just curious, you know, now that it's a park instead, what the feeling, how important is it to have this road? Because it seems to me that it must be handily $1 million worth of the cost of the development of this park. And I guess the other piece is, if it's important enough that it should remain a part of the plan, I've always had a problem with, and I'm not sure whether the topography will allow anything different or not, but with the fact that so much of this proposed road is drawn in on public property. That is to say, you know, there are two other parcels over here that will, you know, all our planning documents call for development to happen on at some point. And it just, the notion, and Jackie was getting at a different aspect of this, but the notion that we're going to, as county taxpayers, go out and pay for the construction of a road that will allow some private developer to become much more wealthy, I have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that this road, or at least half of this road, could be routed, you know, Stancil Drive, if you will, could just stub out at the end toward the Jesse Hogan property or Jesse Hogan Heirs property. And and a lot of this road could be shifted off onto their property, and we could have a piece come down the along past the Duke Forest part of that site up there, and simply leave the last piece of this puzzle to be filled in by folks who are coming along later in the process and who are not spending my tax dollars. So I just wanted to throw both of those subjects out there for discussion.
Hear, hear.
I think you make a lot of interesting points. From our, you know, our process, we understood that we needed to design a connector road going from point A to point B. So eventually, if you go back to our pre-concept plan, it was more of a straight shot. And then, as I mentioned, the discussion about the school's campus and other reasons gave us reason to think further to the west. But I think you make a lot
of interesting points. So just for clarification, David, the reason you put that road there is because we made you put that road there.
It was in your plan. And
okay.
It was our understanding it needed.
And is Mark right on the estimate of?
It's every bit of $1 million, I think. Is it not? More. They're telling me more. All told, yes.
Yeah, so
the bridge is going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm sure.
And it crosses the creek.
It does, right.
Just because it's on the plan. We're great at roads and parks. yeah, I would support an examination of whether that's really necessary.
Commissioner Jacobs looks like he's ready to address us again.
We would be thrilled if you would re-examine that. We also are concerned about spending taxpayer money to subsidize development. In fact, OWASA's policy regarding the extension of water and sewer would have required us to subsidize all the developments in the area to extend water and sewer to the park and the schools. And Chapel Hill and Orange County lobbied successfully with the OWASA board to change its policy so that we will be reimbursed on the sewer and OWASA will provide the water lines, understanding that that would have to go in the area anyway. So if there's a way that we can share the cost with the development community that will take advantage of public money and public infrastructure, we certainly welcome it.
Could we please ask couple people to get together and go over this issue, maybe members of your staff, and maybe you and Mark could talk about it in your respective leadership roles and come up with some ideas? Or
I mean, if, you know, I'm not sure what the right way to proceed on that issue is, but it's, you know, as I was describing that, I want to approach the map for a minute to draw with my finger what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Just to make sure
I
that I'm being clear about it.
I was wondering if Dave could actually do that so that the viewing public could see specifically the area of road that we're talking about.
Point to it or use a laser?
Use a laser.
Okay, yeah.
That'll show up on TV.
All right. Well, the road in general that we're talking about, of course, is but as it comes off of Eubanks Road, it straddles the property line with Duke Forest and then the property line with the Hogan Heirs. It cuts across the corner of this landlocked lot and this one, crosses the stream of Jones Creek and heads south into the subdivision to the south.
Now, what I'm trying to suggest is that if that lateral, that east-west road at the bottom of that map simply stubbed out toward the Jesse Hogan property, that number one, we would change and dedicate right of way beyond that point, basically, that we would change the question of who it is that's building the bridge across Jones Creek, mm-hmm. taxpayers versus some future developer, number one. And number two, it seems to me that there will be that it will create that there would still be some type of connector road coming through there, but that instead of essentially winding your way down, but in a more or less straight shot down into the developments to the south, that when and if that road's ever built, that you will come in, that basically the road will come in and it'll be shooting you back out toward Old 86. You'll need probably to come to a three-way stop, or at least to come to enough of a stop to yield to oncoming traffic and make a left and head down in, and that it essentially becomes de facto a kind of traffic calming measure to force that intersection, basically to change the intersection and change it from that orientation to that orientation, would change the whole nature of how people would get from Eubanks Roads down to Lake Hogan Farms.
So this road might do something like this, and then the road that provides access to the subdivision might go to the west or to the south.
Yeah, and it would, right? I mean, as I'm imagining it, and again, I don't know anything about the topography out here, but I'm imagining it that you would stub out here, dedicate right of way to the edge of the property, and that we would show this connector here, mm-hmm. coming, you know, so you would build some portion of this still down to here.
And us.
If it's important to have a connector road there at all, which I'm simply wasn't privy to the conversations about how it ever became a part of our plan.
Well, we stand at your disposal. We respect your process. We understand that the connector road policy has implications for y'all, and we're trying to work with whatever you ask us to do. The money that I recall is $1.5 million, half of which would be allocated to the school project and half for the parks. So obviously, any savings there would go immediately to other public facilities. And
or not be spent.
Well, at least I'm sure it would be spent, and certainly for the park, it's going to have to be phased as it is, because it's going to cost in excess of $5 million to do what we've planned, and we don't have that much money at hand. And I wanted to point out that in the 2001 bond, there was $3 million for a soccer super fund, and that's going to go part of it's going to go to fund two of those soccer fields so that we can make this a significant area of soccer use, as opposed to only being able to afford to put in two now and two at some point in the future. So, you know, we're trying to make the money go as far mm-hmm. as it can. And one other point that was raised while I'm standing here, the county already has an ordinance regarding light pollution, which I don't know if our planning board proposed it before or after Mr. Bryan was on the board, but I'm sure we would be glad to share it with you. And we would certainly abide by any restrictions on unnecessary lighting. It's important to us, too.
Yeah, just a little bit of historic commentary. First of all, Mark, I find your idea quite appealing in many respects. Just to sort of put it into historical context, the corridor was never established as part of the Connector Roads policy. It doesn't establish corridors, it establishes connections. And the design behind that is that it would evolve. It would be implemented by developers as they come through, and it just so happens that the developer of this site happens to be the county. So any intimation that there was some notion behind the policy to use public funds to essentially support and or build infrastructure to add to private development is flat not true. In that respect, as long as as the concept were kept in place, I think your idea makes a lot of sense. Part of the idea behind it, obviously, is to provide, again, an alternative north-south corridor to Old 86. Old 86 will come under significant development pressure. It already is to some degree. The plans on the books call for simply adding bike lanes and sidewalks and not to add travel lanes, and we want to try to make sure that we don't add to that problem. So as development occurs along those corridors, providing a secondary access, and I think you're absolutely right, having developers provide as much of that corridor as possible is the most desirable scenario. So that was the idea behind it. Obviously, a lot of vehicle trips are going to be generated by this activity. You know, like it or don't, it may not be private development, but it's going to generate a lot of vehicle activity, particularly at peak times. And then whatever happens to the east is likely to do so as well. So in some capacity or another. Sorry, Dan. In some form or fashion, I think it's important that that corridor be preserved for those reasons. But I have no qualms whatsoever about your approach.
Yeah, and I didn't, just to clarify, I didn't mean to imply that. I just was trying to talk about how it was working out in
right.
practice rather than what was sort of...
Right, but I wanted to be very clear that was never the intent. And that, frankly, the intent was that we were not assuming at the time that that was put into place that Orange County was going to buy up half of this section of Orange County. That was not something that was envisioned.
That definitely came as a surprise.
Yes, it did. And so having said that, I think your response to the situation makes sense.
Okay.
All right, well, there's something to chew on in developing your plan.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, north of Eubank Road is the only piece of land that also is developable in Peterborough, probably for...
Speaking of the mic, so I can hear you.
Probably north of, right the entrance of Eubanks Road in Old 86, right?
Yeah, let's get the vicinity map up.
And I think part of also the rationale is... I mean, traffic is going to increase, and all 86 is going to take a big hit on that. And I think part of our connectivity is to, and I think the right thing to do is to try to dilute as much as possible, as fairly as possible, you know, distribute the traffic. And if we, I mean, this part over here north of Eubanks Road, if there's any place for to place commercial development, I think that's probably one of the last spots left in Carborough. You know, so that folks in this area at least can go out and have a cup of coffee.
That's good.
You know, so I think, we're not going to save. That money's going to be spent anyway. And like Alex said, you know, it happens to be the county, the developer, and we do get a lot of good stuff from the county, and they're trace off, and I'm sure we will have to deal with each other for many, many years ahead to come. And I like the idea, but also I think it's necessary
mm-hmm.
for the purpose of pedestrian and safety, especially when there's going to be a lot of traffic in that area.
I was just going to offer a suggestion that perhaps you give our staff an opportunity to look at the corridor and explore the idea that you've mentioned, Mark, and see how that compares to what's on the current alignment and see what potentially works and doesn't work and bring a report back to you all.
That'd be helpful.
Sounds good.
That'd be great.
Okay. So we can move on.
Okay. Did you want to add anything? Okay. Is there anything else about this park that right now we need to talk about?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you
for
all your hard work.
Excellent. Great work on the whole project. All right. Our next agenda item is D2, a request to approve a revolving loan for Cycling Specifics, LLC.
The purpose of this item is to present the Board of Aldermen the Cycling Specifics, LLC revolving loan fund application as James Harris makes his way. The expanding business, which was located at 118 East Main Street, is relocated to 403 West Weaver Street. The applicant is requesting a $45,000 loan for 6 years at 5.5% interest, only payments for the first 6 months. The board is asked to, based upon the information provided in the application and the recommendation from the ESC, approve the funding request and associated budget amendment, and that's the Economic Sustainability Commission. James.
Thank you. We have the applicants here tonight. We have Lori Stennis and Lori Hoffer. If you'd stand up so they could see who you are. We'd like to let the board know who we're considering loaning money to. This is a business expansion loan request. They were currently located at, they were formerly located at 118 East Main Street, and they've moved to 403 West Weaver. It's the yellow house right behind Balloons and Tombs. This business is a custom bicycle shop. They do custom fittings for expensive bicycles, and they sell to high-end customers. They also serve as a service-based cycling resource center for the local market and the southeastern United States. So they're a good complement to the other bicycle shops in town because they can fit folk for bicycles, and then they can go there and buy affordable units. They're asking for $45,000 for 6 years at 5.5%. The collateral that they're providing is real estate property on Pine Hill Drive and Summerwind Road in Chapel Hill. Also, some timberland is being offered as well. We'll take that and the equipment that they're going to purchase with our money. They're going to use this money to complete the renovations at the new location and to purchase new inventory, which will allow them to do a rapid expansion at their new location. We currently have $310,000 in our revolving loan fund. After we make this loan, we'd have $265,000. We're requesting that you all support the recommendation of the ESC and the recommendation from our loan packager to approve this. We're also asking you to approve the budget amendment, which will move the money to where we can spend it. And I'll entertain questions if you have.
That's two separate motions.
Right.
Yes.
Are there any questions about this?
I was just that I was there for the presentation, and I was very impressed by the rapid growth of the business and their ability to create a truly unique niche market, which nobody else is doing. They've received national press and national attention for their work, and this is one of the more impressive applications I've seen come across the table.
Yep.
So I'll also move approval.
Second.
I'll just add, you know, this is certainly a kind of business that we're really proud to have in Carrboro and to have continued to be in Carrboro after moving. The resolution has been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Is there also an ordinance?
Move the,
budget amendment.
Where is it?
Move the budget amendment.
Right. Wherever it is, it's moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Good job.
Thanks very much.
These guys are.
With that, we complete the items that are on our agenda for tonight. Are there any matters from the town clerk? Manager?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Attorney?
There's a memo on your desk, and I think I also had an email to you about the ETJ and transition area representation on the planning board, and I just raise it because if it's something that you want to move on, we would need to at some point set up a public hearing, refer the ordinance to, the things that we typically do to amend the land use ordinance. I took the liberty of drafting an ordinance that accomplishes those things, and you can do it very well.
I move that we direct staff to do so.
Yeah.
To do so being to
move forward.
Moving forward with
a motion
public
as
hearing.
As we discussed it.
Well, we're
The motion is that we set a public hearing.
Right. Right.
Okay. Okay.
And I
all right,
second.
So that's been moved and seconded.
An ordinance drafted, right?
The ordinance is drafted here, right. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So we just set up the public hearing for whenever we can
let's
get that on the agenda.
Time.
Right.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that we put this matter on for public hearing. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
Okay.
All right. Jackie.
Just real quickly, I'd like us to set an agenda item before this summer to talk about construction downtown. If you look around our small downtown, over the next couple years, we could have several very large projects happening simultaneously. And that could get to be a problem if we have several big projects with heavy equipment and lots of digging and trucks and people moving in and out. It could clog our roads. It can create lots of problems. So what I'm thinking is, let's have a discussion before the problems start of how, if when these big projects get going, how we're going to logistically deal with it and come up with some ordinance mechanisms and some rules so that as that building's taking place, it says it is the nuisance factor and the nuisance factor is the best word I can come up with, is minimized. I'm not saying to prevent it, but, you know, there's a possibility that simultaneously there will be a project going on the corner of Carr and Greensboro, in the middle of the old Farmers Market parking lot, on the corner of Roberson and Main, all three of the, and behind the Cradle. All of that going on simultaneously with our already narrow roads. And it could be overwhelming. So it seems like if we come up with a plan for how we're going to deal with it and maybe some rules for the builders, that we can minimize the impact. Is this making sense to anybody? I mean, I just started envisioning it the other day of it all happening.
Sure, except to this extent, which is that we're talking about, except for one instance, projects that have not yet been approved, so we don't even know what sequence this is going to occur in. And to some degree, these issues are addressed and can be addressed in the CUP. That's not to say that we shouldn't have a discussion prior to that, coming up with, again, some sort of contingency.
Well, something's going to happen on all of those properties within the next, 3 to 5 years, and there are going to be times when there are simultaneous large projects going on downtown that are going to gum up traffic, that are going to block roads, that are just going to really be, and I'm not, that's just part of life, but I think we can come up with some ways ahead of time of dealing with it rather than waking up one morning and saying, shoot, you can't drive through downtown because there are cement trucks everywhere, or there's, so coming up with some ways of dealing with all this.
Could we get a little staff reaction to this general topic? I mean,
I bring it up because it's been brought up to me by numerous citizens over the past couple weeks.
I don't know if any of the other staff has a comment at this point, but I would say, conceptually it makes sense. I guess, as with many things, the devil's in the details, and trying to figure out exactly what we realistically could do to minimize that, and at the same time not stop the building that we want and need downtown. So I guess as a staff we just need to have some conversation and look at what some other small towns have done with these kinds of issues.
I'm looking at hours.
We've not been faced with that before. So,
well, can I suggest that that y'all do have those types of conversations and maybe report back to us in writing at some point, and if it seems like there's something there for the Board of Aldermen to schedule a discussion on, then we'll do it.
Well, maybe looking at the sequencing and seeing where those
judges
are.
I think there's a variety of issues that they'll need to look at in doing that. Anything? Oh, you have a committee issue.
Well, I just wanted to update on the new Horizons task force that March 21st we will share it as a agenda item for the board.
Okay, great.
Alex, just a request. In our retreat, you know, we obviously had some discussion about amendment to the town charter to try to clean up some issues of succession and appointment that we've been dealing with, and I've gotten a couple of inquiries from folks wondering where that kind of is.
I can tell you that you all at the retreat, if you recall, requested that be discussed at the April work session, and the plan is for it to be on the agenda for the April 11th work session.
Well, then you got me beaten.
Okay, great. Good to know.
Outstanding. Thank you.
You all did get a memo from me on that. You either did get or you will get within...
I think they will get one.
They'll get one Friday from me on that issue about what others have done or haven't done.
I'm just too slow.
My point is also following up on the retreat, which is I'd like to get a report on the action items that were generated out of the retreat, like just a list of what they are, and perhaps also if in the month since then there's been any progress, particularly some of the committees we formed, if they've met, you know, to know that. I just, you know, it's kind of all went into a black hole for me, and I'd like to try and pull it back out. I know in the laws of physics that's not possible, but in politics it is.
we can do that.
Thank you.
Being an enterprise which is not subject to the laws of physics.
All right. If I could, one more thing real quick. First, I wanted to mention that Alderman Coleman and I had the pleasure, along with Mayor Foy, of being present for the opening of the new Children's Museum, Kid Zoo, which is on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill, but is a facility that is intended to serve a whole area. And I, for one, was really impressed by what a professional operation it was, especially given how new it is and how recently developed the whole plan was. It's really beautiful and is really worth visiting if you have anybody 8 or younger to take to it. That's based on their own statements about ages.
You love those wild things.
The initial show or whatever you would call it is all related to Maurice Sendak, the children's artist, and includes a number of things that I think would be interesting for adults to read about too. It has some copies of some of the parts of the original manuscript of the book, and it just was a really nice display.
Did you put a plug for Carvara for relocation? I mean, this is where the wild things are.
This is where the wild things live.
To his credit, they made a point of mentioning how helpful our staff member James Harris was in trying to help them search for a site in Carvara, mm-hmm. and where they are is a site that's for the time being. So we'll see about that. On a more substantive matter, real quick, we had some discussion last year and as a board, and there was a lot of interest in this notion, but we didn't actually take it anywhere. But we had a discussion about the possibility of experimenting with closing the, I guess it's the 100 block of Weaver Street on Sunday mornings during the Sunday morning event that happens in that block. The first of those various brunch on the lawn or whatever you want to call it events is happening later this month, and I wondered whether we could follow up on that notion and go ahead and experiment with I think it's the 19th or so is going to be the first
event on the lawn there, experiment with closing that down from, you know, whatever, like 9 to noon or 9 to 1 on Sunday, March 19th, as an initial experiment with that. I don't know whether that's too soon to actually take that step, but...
George?
Look, take all of the streets. So I have kids there.
I think what you're suggesting in terms of clothing is something what we do similar for the music.
Yeah, except it would only be that one block, I think, maybe during the music festival.
And for the most part, just setting up the barricades at the block is not that difficult to do. It's coming around the turn, as I recall, from Franklin and getting traffic over and so forth so that the traffic's channeled in Main Street. It certainly can be done. We do it as the music festival. I think we have to, you know, take a little bit of look, and I think we could report back in another week as to what's involved in doing that. But we're taught March 19th.
I think that's when it is. I mean, that might be too. That's less than 2 weeks away.
Yeah,
so
that's really.
That's a week.
That's it, and that seems early for their schedule.
I asked at the customer service desk.
Well, you know, I mean, we can look at it and then maybe, you know,
all right, well,
pilot it at another point. But that's a short window, I would think.
I was thinking the same thing. If we could have maybe a little more time, because I think, you know, there are other businesses along there that I think we'd want to have a conversation with and give them a little bit of advance notice.
That's fine. I mean, we actually usually have a public hearing about street
closing. Yeah, we normally do.
And I think it's required by the ordinance.
It is in the ordinance, yes.
All right, well, then let me suggest this. Can we, at the soonest available public hearing, schedule a public hearing on the question of doing that street closure for a time that would be conveniently shortly thereafter, if you see what I'm saying?
I do.
Okay. So, and I'll let you figure out what the calendar needs to look like in order to make that happen. And then one final thing. I know it's kind of getting late. I just wanted to say that there was a very difficult and unfortunate incident that happened Friday in Chapel Hill, and that led to an investigation here in Carrboro of the possibility of whether there was some kind of threat at University Commons apartments. And I just wanted to say that, and I think speak for the entire board in saying that we're tremendously proud of the response that our entire town government had to the situation or potential situation, and in particular to the response that our Carrboro Police Department had to the situation. What could have been a very difficult and dangerous situation was handled with outstanding professionalism by our police department. And I understand that the personnel from the State Bureau of Investigation and the FBI who responded to the scene were tremendously impressed with how well-controlled the situation was by the Carrboro Police Department. And what a great job our entire town government did in dealing with a situation that's not usually within the scope of the kind of things that we deal with in Carrboro. So I just wanted to thank the town manager, who I know was working hard on that situation all day on Friday, and also everyone in our police department and other departments of town government who responded to the situation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. With that, if there's a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
It's been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those